This is Steve Scher reading from the Champaign-Urbana News Gazette for March 10th, 2025. On the front page, we'll start with a story about a Champaign Central sophomore to play at a prestigious event. At 16 years of age, Ben Lieb said he doesn't remember much of when music wasn't a big part of his world. "Pretty much my whole life I've been involved in music," the Champaign Central sophomore from Savoy said. "My dad, Brad, has been a music teacher band director for 27 years, now serving as a music teacher at Danville's Southwest Elementary." The younger Lieb is a standout in band, having been named the top chair among French horn players scheduled to perform this weekend at the 32nd Music for All National Festival in Indianapolis as part of the Honor Band of America. He was selected following national auditions. Lieb has been playing the French horn since fifth grade. He said it was kind of weird how he fell in love with the French horn. "My dad was teaching me trumpet because he played trumpet in college and high school," he said. "It was like the French horn reached out to me. It's just a cool instrument." Lieb said he would enjoy making music a profession. Being named top chair, which means he was judged the top French horn player, in a prestigious event like the Music for All Festival, can only help. He is one of 8 French horn players selected for the festival. In all, 62 students from a national pool of auditions representing 20 states and 55 different schools will perform. The Music for All National Festival is home to 2 national ensembles, the Honor Band of America and the Jazz Band of America, which are both recognized as 2 of the top honor ensembles for young musicians in the nation. A selective audition process is used to choose the students for the ensembles. The festival runs Thursday through Saturday, with a performance on the final day. Lieb said he finds pleasure in being around like-minded people who enjoy instrumental music. "It feels really cool," he said. "You know, everybody enjoys doing what they do. It's fun being around people who like music as much as I do." At Central, he's in the Wind Symphony. Outside of school, he's in a youth orchestra in Champaign, East Central Illinois Youth Orchestra. Lieb's music of preference is classical and jazz. "I definitely see it as a profession. It's also something I want to do." He conceded, "Becoming a musician is one of the more risky paths to take, because many are called, but few are chosen. But there definitely are a lot of opportunities out there," Lieb said. The musician also has a bent towards science, possibly chemistry. "A lot of my classmates do things in science and math. They usually prefer physics," Lieb said, "but I don't prefer math." Directing the band will be Rodney Dorsey, professor of music at Florida State University, where he conducts the FSU Wind Orchestra and guides the Graduate Wind Conducting Program. Dorsey is well acquainted with the Hoosier State, having conducted the IU Wind Ensemble and taught graduate conducting courses at the Indiana University Jacobs School of Music. The festival weekend will include music education and life skills workshops, evening receptions, socials, and banquets. The Music for All National Festival also hosts scholastic ensembles that include high school and middle school concert bands, orchestras, percussion ensembles, and chamber ensembles. The concert will be live streamed online. Tickets are also available. But Lieb's life isn't wrapped up in just music. He said he also enjoys mountain biking at Kickapoo State Recreation Area near Danville and snowboarding. He was introduced to that sport on a trip to Wisconsin. In addition to his father, the Lieb family includes some budding musicians, including 13-year-old Abby, who plays the oboe, and 11-year-old Nathan, who plays the drums but is not formally in a band yet. Mom Christine played the oboe in middle school. "Don't mess with Abby, though. She was American Taekwondo Illinois State Champion for her age and belt rank in traditional forms, and district champion in a 6-state area in the creative form category," according to her father. In in another story, headlined Hyatt Place CU sold to Dallas-based company. A downtown hotel that opened a little over a decade ago has been sold to new owners. Hyatt Place Champaign-Urbana, located at 217 North Neal Street, is now part of the portfolio of Icon Lodging, a hospitality company headquartered in Dallas. With spacious guest rooms, thoughtful amenities, and an unbeatable location near the University of Illinois, we're excited to bring Icon Lodging's signature commitment to service and excellence to this dynamic community, the company wrote in a LinkedIn post. This acquisition marks another step forward as we continue to grow and deliver outstanding guest experiences. Stay tuned for more updates as we elevate hospitality at Hyatt Place Champaign-Urbana. Property records show that Icon purchased the property through an LLC for $18.25 million from YG Hotel Investors LLC. The company does not appear to be affiliated with Icon Hospitality, the developer on the Hotel Royer project in Urbana. Hyatt Place Champaign-Urbana opened in June 2014. Hans Grotelussen, developer on the project and part of YG Hotel Investors, could not be reached for comment. The sale of the Hyatt closed on December 16, 2024. Just a few days later, on December 19th, Green Street Realty closed on the purchase of three properties that formerly belonged to Downtown Champaign Holdings LLC, including the building that houses Carmen's at 804 North Neal Street. Downtown Champaign Holdings LLC, which is managed by Grotelussen, had previously reached an agreement with First Mid Bank and Trust for a consent foreclosure on the three sites. CRS Hospitality now works in collaboration with Green Street Realty to manage Carmen's, which was previously run by another LLC, also associated with Grotelussen. In the top of the morning column, by Joey Wright, Grabbing a Bite with Joey Wright. Each week we chop it up with the folks responsible for dishing up food around the area. What restaurant should we try next? Let Joey Wright know at jwright, that's J-W-R-I-G-H-T, at news-gazette.com. Flesser's Candy Kitchen in Tuscola has been a fixture of the community for most of the last 125 years. And the restaurant, which originally opened in 1901, closed in the late 1970s, and reopened in 2004, offers something that few others in the region can. What's unique about us is we're one of the few authentic, old-fashioned soda fountains left in America, Devin Flesser's story said. There are fewer and fewer of them, so that's a big deal. And what makes us special is we make our own ice cream. Flesser has a staff comprised of family members and longtime helpers. The plan, says Flesser's story, is for the restaurant to maintain its traditions well into the future. I'm third generation. My kids are fourth generation, Flesser's story said. I'm hoping that my kids will take it over, and I have a couple employees who are also looking to be part of that succession plan. Flesser's story and staff are in the midst of a busy Easter season, with candy eggs available for purchase at Harvest Market in Champaign. The Tuscola staple also offers lunch 6 days a week. Your regulars become like family, Flesser's story said. We care deeply about our customers. We know a lot of people, and what's fun is we have regulars from out of town, too, who don't come here but maybe four times per year, but we know them. In national and world news, a story headlined, Homeland Security Secretary taps new ICE leaders, moves to ID leakers. From the Associated Press. Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem on Sunday announced new leadership at the agency tasked with immigration enforcement, as she also pledged to step up lie detector tests on employees to identify those who may be leaking information about operations to the media. The authorities that I have under the Department of Homeland Security are broad and extensive, and I plan to use every single one of them to make sure that we're following the law, that we are following the procedures in place to keep people safe, and that we're making sure we're following through on what President Trump has promised, Noam told CBS's Face the Nation. While these polygraph exams are typically not admissible in court proceedings, they are frequently used by federal law enforcement agencies and for national security clearances. The Department of Homeland Security is a national security agency, DHS spokesperson Tricia McLaughlin said in a statement. We can, should, and will polygraph personnel. White House officials have previously expressed frustration with the pace of deportations, blaming it in part on recent leaks revealing cities where authorities plan to conduct operations. Noam's announcement of two new leadership appointments within the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement comes less than 2 months into the Trump administration and demonstrates the importance that the administration places on carrying out the president's deportation agenda. Todd Lyons, the former Assistant Director of Field Operations for the agency's enforcement arm, will serve as acting ICE director. Madison Sheehan, Secretary of the Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fisheries, and Noam's former aide when she was governor of South Dakota, has been tapped to be the agency's deputy director. The leadership changes come after ICE's acting director was reassigned on February 21st. Two other top immigration enforcement officials were reassigned February 11th. Those staffing changes came amid frustrations in the Trump administration about the pace of immigration arrests. Noam also announced on Friday that the agency has identified and planned to prosecute two leakers of information. On Sunday, she said these two people were leaking our enforcement operations that we had planned and were going to conduct in several cities and exposed vulnerabilities. She said they could face up to 10 years in federal prison. Armed man shot by Secret Service near White House. An armed man believed to be traveling from Indiana was shot by U.S. Secret Service agents near the White House after a confrontation early Sunday, according to authorities. No one else was injured in the shooting that happened around midnight about a block from the White House, according to a Secret Service statement. President Donald Trump was in Florida at the time of the shooting. The Secret Service received information from local police about an alleged suicidal individual who was traveling from Indiana and found the man's car and a person matching his description nearby. As officers approached, the individual brandished a firearm and an armed confrontation ensued, during which shots were fired by our personnel, the Secret Service said in a statement. The man was hospitalized. The Secret Service said his condition was unknown. The Metropolitan Police Department will investigate because the shooting involved law enforcement officers. The police department declined to provide more details. Trump's Mar-a-Lago home, Air Force intercepts aircraft flying in restricted zone. Air Force fighter jets intercepted a civilian aircraft flying in the temporarily restricted airspace near Donald Trump's Florida home Sunday, bringing the number of violations to more than 20 since the president took office on January 20th. North American Aerospace Defense Command said in a statement that Sunday's incident, which took place as Trump finished a round of golf at his West Palm Beach golf course, saw F-16s deploy flares to get the attention of the civilian pilot. Jets also conducted an intercept on Saturday morning, shortly after Trump arrived at the course from his private Mar-a-Lago club and residence. The airspace intrusions in the heavily congested South Florida airspace have prompted fighter jet intercepts, but did not alter Trump's schedule or impact his security, officials said. NORAD says the flares may have been visible from the ground, but they burn out quickly and don't pose danger. Federal officials maintain a permanent flight restriction over Trump's club that expands to a radius of 30 nautical miles when the president is in residence. Violations and intercepts are relatively routine, but NORAD is raising alarm over the frequency of the intrusions since Trump's inauguration, saying it has responded to more than 20 incidents and blames civilian pilots for not following regulations requiring them to check for airspace restrictions before taking off. Health and Human Services Department. Agency makes $25,000 buyout offer to most of its employees. Most of the 80,000 federal workers responsible for researching diseases, inspecting food, and administering Medicare and Medicaid under the auspices of the Health and Human Services Department were emailed an offer to leave their job for as much as a $25,000 payment as part of President Donald Trump's government cuts. Workers cannot start opting in until Monday and have until 5 p.m. on Friday to submit a response for the so-called voluntary separation offer. The email was sent to staff across the department, which includes the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta and the National Institutes of Health, as well as the Food and Drug Administration, both in Maryland. The mass email went out to a broad population of HHS employees, landing in their inboxes days before agency heads are due to offer plans for shrinking their workforces. HHS is one of the government's costliest federal agencies, with an annual budget of about $1.7 trillion that is mostly spent on health care coverage for millions of people enrolled in Medicare and Medicaid. The agency oversees health insurance for roughly half the country through Medicare for older adults and Medicaid for disabled and poor Americans. There was no immediate comment Sunday from HHS. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., Trump's health secretary, has hinted at plans at deep cuts to the staff. In news from Canada, former central banker to replace Trudeau as next prime minister. Former central banker Mark Carney will become Canada's next prime minister after the governing Liberal Party elected him its leader Sunday as the country deals with U.S. President Donald Trump's trade war and annexation threat, and a federal election looms. Carney, 59, replaces Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, who announced his resignation in January, but remains prime minister until his successor is sworn in the coming days. Carney won in a landslide, winning 85.9% of the vote. "There is someone who is trying to weaken our economy," Carney said. "Donald Trump, as we know, has put unjustified tariffs on what we build, on what we sell, and how we make a living. He's attacking Canadian families, workers, and businesses, and we cannot let him succeed, and we won't." Carney said Canada will keep retaliatory tariffs in place until the Americans show us respect. Carney navigated crises when he was the head of the Bank of Canada and when, in 2013, he became the first non-citizen to run the Bank of England since it was founded in 1694. His appointment won bipartisan praise in the UK after Canada recovered from the 2008 financial crisis faster than many other countries. The opposition Conservatives hoped to make the election about Trudeau, whose popularity declined as food and housing prices rose and immigration surged. Trump's trade war and his talk of making Canada the 51st U.S. state have infuriated Canadians, who are booing the American anthem at NHL and NBA games. Some are canceling trips south of the border, and many are avoiding buying American goods when they can. The surge in Canadian nationalism has bolstered the Liberal Party's chances in a parliamentary election expected within days or weeks, and Liberal showings have been improving steadily in opinion polls. "We have made this the greatest country in the world, and now our neighbors want to take us. No way," Carney said earlier. After decades of bilateral stability, the vote on Canada's next leader is expected to focus on who is the best equipped to deal with the United States. Carney has picked up one endorsement after another from cabinet ministers and members of parliament since declaring his candidacy in January. He is a highly educated economist with Wall Street experience who has long been interested in entering politics and becoming prime minister, but he lacks political experience. Israel will send a delegation to Qatar to try to advance ceasefire negotiations. Israel said that it would send a delegation to Qatar on Monday in an effort to advance the negotiations around the ceasefire in Gaza, while Hamas reported positive signals in talks with Egyptian and Qatari mediators on starting negotiations on the truce's delayed second phase. The statement from Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's office gave no details except to say it had accepted the invitation of U.S.-backed mediators. Hamas spokesman Abdel Latif al-Quanoa also gave no details. Talks on the second phase should have started a month ago. There was no immediate comment from the White House, which on Wednesday made the surprise confirmation of direct U.S. talks with Hamas. Over the past week, Israel has pressed Hamas to release half of the remaining hostages in return for an extension of the first phase, which ended last weekend, and a promise to negotiate a lasting truce. Hamas is believed to have 24 living hostages and the bodies of 35 others. Israel last weekend cut off all supplies to Gaza and its more than 2 million people as it pressed Hamas to agree. The militant group has said that the move would affect the remaining hostages as well. The ceasefire has paused the deadliest and most destructive fighting ever between Israel and Hamas, sparked by the Hamas-led attack on southern Israel on October 7, 2023. The first phase allowed the return of 25 living hostages and the remains of 8 others in exchange for the release of nearly 2,000 Palestinian prisoners. Israeli forces have withdrawn to buffer zones inside Gaza. Hundreds of thousands of displaced Palestinians have returned to northern Gaza for the first time since early in the war, and hundreds of trucks of aid entered per day until Israel suspended supplies. Before their weekly rally in Tel Aviv, relatives of hostages appealed to U.S. President Donald Trump, who met with 8 former hostages on Wednesday. "Mr. President, a return to war means a death sentence for the living hostages left behind. Please, sir, do not allow Netanyahu to sacrifice them." Returning to local news, police searching for suspects in February 8th Urbana homicide. Champaign County Crime Stoppers is asking for the public's help identifying subjects related to a homicide. At 8:01 p.m. February 7th, a shooting occurred in the 2000 block of Wouter Street, which resulted in the death of Sherman McCraney, 18, of Urbana. 2 male subjects were captured on surveillance video in the area at the time of the shooting. They briefly stopped and talked with a third man just prior to the shooting and before fleeing the area. Investigators are asking for the public's help identifying the suspects and the person of interest. The suspects appear to be 2 black men, one of average height and a stocky build, and one tall with a thin build. The third man, currently considered a person of interest, was wearing a tan jacket and black pants. Police ask that any resident or business in the area with exterior surveillance cameras or anyone with cell phone video around that time and area review the footage for any suspicious persons or vehicles. If you have any information regarding this or any crime in Champaign County, please contact Crime Stoppers at 217-373-TIPS, 217-373-TIPS, at 373tips.com, or via the P3Tips mobile app. Tipsters are always 100% anonymous when contacting Crime Stoppers and receive a code number to check on rewards. All tips submitted to Crime Stoppers are electronically stripped of any personally identifying information and processed by a third-party answering service. Crime Stoppers will pay cash rewards of $5,000 for tips that lead to an arrest in any Champaign County homicide, $2,500 for tips leading to an arrest in any felony involving a gun in Champaign County, and up to $1,000 for tips leading to arrests in other crimes. In sports, we have an analysis from Scott Ritchie. "Watch out, Big Ten, because the Illini are one of those teams that could just blitz people. March is full of possibilities. It's what makes college basketball, college basketball. Literally, anything can happen. It's dubbed madness for a reason. The Illinois men's basketball team is now in position to explore the bounds of those possibilities with postseason play on the horizon. It's not something the Illini could have claimed at any point in the last 2 months, mired in a morass of injuries and illnesses and the resulting inconsistent play and results. But Illinois, 2011, 12-8 in the Big Ten, will head into the Big Ten tournament with real mojo. Friday night's come-from-behind 88-80 win against number 18 Purdue marked a third straight victory and a second in a row against a ranked team. What's possible for the Illini this week in Indianapolis has broadened in scope. "We can't get content right now," Illinois guard Trey White said after Friday's win against the Boilermakers. "This was a great win, but there's still so much more basketball. That's where we want to be, playing as one of the last teams at the end of this." It's a vision of the future with a lot more clarity in the wake of three consecutive victories than an Illinois had after going 5-4 in January with a pair of Big Ten home losses and 4-4 in February with a third. With more confidence, too, having rallied from a 10-point deficit midway through the second half to beat Purdue. Simply the confidence to win a close game when things are really, really hard against an unbelievably good opponent, Illinois coach Brad Underwood said was driving his growing belief in his team. "A team that has the best offense in the league to get stops when you need them, to find enough moxie when you're down and make plays, my confidence is really high. I may not have said that Monday. I think we had to get punched, and, to be honest with you, we got smacked pretty good in New York in the loss to Duke. They bounce back. I think when you can get up off the mat, that's who we want everybody in our program to be." Friday night's down-to-the-wire showdown with Purdue was not something Illinois had much experience in this season. Big Ten blowouts have been more common, including 20-point wins against Iowa and Michigan last week. What close games the Illinois have played in the league mostly went the wrong direction. An overtime loss at Northwestern in early December, the two-point loss at Michigan State, another overtime loss at Nebraska. "At the beginning of the season, we were kind of shaken up and rattled in those last moments," White said. "This game, we stood together and just carried over what we've been doing in practice for sure. We didn't get rattled. We kept having our little huddles, and everybody was locked in. We still had that belief and that fire." I feel like that started in practice a few weeks ago. But just to see that carry over into the game is a good step. We're elevating at the right time. Underwood gave Wright and Kylan Boswell the credit for leading Illinois through the final minutes of Friday's game. While the Illini were able to erase Purdue's 10-point lead in the second half, the Boilermakers fade away quietly. They led by four before Illinois went on a 13-1 run in the final 2 minutes, 18 seconds to close out the game. "It was White and Boswell in timeouts talking," Underwood said. "It was handling situations. It was not putting your head down. It was encouragement. It was togetherness. All of those things sound really cliche, but it's the truth." Winning close games can be a March imperative. For every NCAA tournament Connecticut has steamrolled its way through to a national title, there are dozens that didn't come easily. Postseason play can be a grind. Illinois will face a first dose of that next week in Indianapolis in the Big Ten tournament, a tournament the Illini won a year ago and again in 2021. This year's team is as capable, maybe even more so, of doing the same. It will take the type of lockdown defense that kept likely Big Ten Player of the Year Braden Smith from scoring in the final 5.5 minutes Friday night, and the type of three-point shooting Illinois managed in the second half, flipping a 4-of-15 burgeoning disaster in the first 20 minutes into a 7-of-15 effort in the next 20. That capability is what makes Illinois truly dangerous in postseason play, and Purdue only got a taste. The 48 points the Illini scored in the second half still pales in comparison to what they did on the road at Oregon, 64 points in the second half, Indiana, 60 points in the first half, and Michigan, 62 points in the second half.